Welcome back to another edition of the Nuggets Inc. podcast here in my East Colfax abode, talking to Mike Singer via the amazing technology that we have where we can actually speak to each other on a podcast over the phone, mastering it before your eyes. Mike, you're about to fly back from the Bay Area. Tell me, how was it out there?
Humbling, dispiriting, defeating. The Nuggets got smoked.
I thought you were going to go on a bunch of D words there. That'd have been great.
I didn't have that many left. But I mean, you know, they're still smarting and I would say reeling from what happened in Monday night's game two loss. The Nuggets had a 12-point lead, 43-31 midway through the second quarter.
Bench had just played really well too at that point.
The bench was playing well. Joker was getting his. They had a healthy lead after the first quarter, and it felt like, okay, maybe they have something. But it also felt like a carbon copy of what happened in game one, where they hung on and they were kind of hanging with the punches and throwing their own punches for Golden State for about two quarters, and then the wheels fell off. In Monday night's game two, Warriors closed the second quarter on a 26-8 run.
Kind of similar to Saturday night, too. I think it was 18-4 at the end of that one.
Right, correct. And then the third quarter eruption. To be in Chase Center when that is happening, Jordan Poole becoming a star in front of everybody's eyes, cementing himself, you know, as a valid splash brother. In his first two playoff games, he's been incredible. I don't think that anybody realized how good of a playmaker he was, let alone how devastating a three-point shooter he was. He had a sequence in that third quarter where he hit one three-pointer, and then he relocated and did a little in-and-out dribble, spun out to the three-point line with DeMarcus Cousins in front of him, and hit another one. And from my vantage point, it was the exact same sequence that Steph Curry has done hundreds of times. And if you didn't have good eyesight or couldn't tell who it was, you would think that that was Steph Curry authoring that sequence. It was an unbelievable play. And I think, you know, in addition to Poole's ascendance, Steph Curry coming off the bench, 34 points in 23 minutes, a super sixth man. He's gunning for sixth man of the year. Klay Thompson hitting five more three-pointers. It's becoming apparent that the Nuggets just don't have the defensive weapons to stick with these guys. I think they're calling it Warriors death lineup 2.0. You throw that with Andrew Wiggins and Draymond Green,
yeah,
and it's just devastating.
That's Curry, Thompson, Wiggins, Draymond, and Poole. And at this point, I don't have the exact numbers in front of me, but it's something like plus 30 with those guys on the floor together. Clearly, as you said, they do not have the defensive answer for that right now.
No, they don't. And so the defense is bleeding into the offense. They're taking the ball out of the basket every single time. The Warriors hit 7 three-pointers in that quarter alone. They followed 3 separate 3-point shooters, 2 4-point plays. Steph had one with Jamichael Green. And Poole had one with Joker about 30 seconds into the third quarter. And you know, you talk about defensive adjustments and having the requisite mindset and attention to detail going into the second half when you're trying to win on the road. And those are the kind of things that just kill you. And, you know, there were the defensive miscommunications, the switching and the miscommunications on that front that just, like, gave up easy dunks. And against this team, Michael Malone said this last night, in order to avoid those runs or withstand those runs, the Nuggets need to play almost perfect basketball. And ultimately, that's why they're looking at a 2-0 deficit. But after what happened last night, that was the furthest thing from, quote, perfect basketball that the Nuggets could put together. They are a, you know, somewhat fractured group leaving San Francisco. And at this point, need to assess where they're at, you know, with themselves before even worrying about the Golden State Warriors ahead of Thursday's Game 3.
I think one of the things that stood out about last night was that the Nuggets just looked really tightly wound. Nikola Jokic, may have overreacted a little bit to the butt pat, I think.
Payton's butt pat.
Yeah, the Gary Payton's butt pat. I mean, yeah, I get it. He just blocked your shot. You're a little frustrated, but I don't know. I think maybe he could have taken that in stride a little bit better. He ends up getting teed up twice in that game, frustrated by Draymond Green's defense, which highly physical. I can understand why he's frustrated. You have the blow up on the bench with Boogie and Will Barton, and multiple people getting in on that as well. One sequence that I saw was it looked like Jeff Green was getting on Will for saying something back that he shouldn't have.
I actually don't think that that was Jeff yelling at Will. I think that that was Jeff Green kind of yelling at Will to lock in, but then he also said something similar to DeMarcus. I don't think he was pinning blame on anybody. I think right. He was saying, guys, this is about our composure. This is about our pride. We're getting our butts handed to us right now. This is not the time for us to fracture and to snipe at each other and to jaw at each other.
Right. So they're unraveling, in multiple levels last night, in multiple instances. I'm sure part of that is they're just getting their butts kicked. But at the same time, you don't see that with really good championship level teams. Now, granted, and I want to say this, this isn't the Nuggets of the future, obviously. They're missing two of their best players. I would not say you judge the state of the Nuggets based upon how they are performing in this series, in the sense that you got guys playing out of position, guys playing roles that, two or three levels up that they shouldn't be doing. Aaron Gordon has not been good, but at the same time, in your max lineup, Aaron Gordon's what, the fourth or fifth option?
Yeah, but all right, Matt, ton to unpack there. First of all, I want to go back to something you said about the pressure and how tightly wound the Nuggets are right now. That is an indication of the disparity and what I was talking about, that they feel the need to be perfect while going up against a team with so many weapons and can hit you in so many different ways.
And a big margin for error.
They have no margin for error.
What I'm saying is the Warriors have a large margin for error.
And I said this going into the series. After Nikola Jokic, who is the second best Nuggets player? If you were to draft these teams from both of these rosters, how many Warriors would you pick before you got to a second Nugget? That's what we're looking at here. In terms of the talent gap. And when you talk about Nikola Jokic's frustration, which led to his game 2 ejection, his first technical came when he was defending Andrew Wiggins and Joker had his forearm on Andrew Wiggins' hip. And that's fine. While it's a soft playoff foul, it's a foul. But the reason why Joker lost it is because at minimum, that is what the Warriors are doing to him every single time down the floor.
Right.
Draymond Green is giving up 5 or 6 inches to him. How do you think he makes up that gap? It's because he's physical and he puts his body into him and has a forearm on his back. So,
well, and grabbing, clutching, all of that.
So in Joker's defense, in his mind, why is he not allowed to do that and get called for a whistle? But Draymond Green is allowed to do that incessantly, and Kevon Looney's allowed to do that incessantly. So you understand where his frustration's coming from. He ends up getting tossed 5 minutes into the fourth quarter. He thought there was a foul call on one of his shots, and it didn't happen. The game was over at that point, pretty much immaterial that he got kicked out. Maybe it's a bad precedent to set, and maybe it's a bad example to set for the rest of the guys when there's already some infighting, but that third quarter was extremely telling to me because Nikola Jokic took 9 shots in that quarter. And in my opinion, he realized he didn't have the help with him. And so some of those early shot clock 3-pointers, Joker hadn't been shooting the 3-pointer well for months now. And him taking those shots is an indication that he doesn't know who else he can ride with at this point. And he says, you know what, if we're going to lose, I'm going to go down fighting and I'm going to shoot every clip I got and just see what happens. And obviously that 44 point third quarter, I think they outscored them 44-30 in that quarter. And I mean, that was the game. There was just such a palpable momentum and rush that those three-pointers had, and you have Steph shimmying, and you got Jordan Poole dancing, and Draymond Green egging people on, that you could see the frustration building, and then it manifested in what we saw with DeMarcus and Will.
I got a question for you. I know at the beginning of this series, and I think even after game one, there was a talk that, hey, we need to attack, we need to push the pace. Can I counter that? I feel like when you're going against that smaller lineup, your best course of action is slow the game down, get Nikola somewhere in the paint, and go through him. Work the ball through him in the paint and try and just pound them with Nikola's brilliance down low and his strength. Now, granted, yes, he's getting pushed around a bunch and not getting a very favorable whistle in this series, but that's their best chance. You're going against a team that's undersized and is trying to run you off the floor. Why not counter that with, we're going to slow it down, we're going to pound it, kind of like what LeBron James did years ago when it was sort of a similar situation against the Warriors.
It's a fair point. And they are small. And when you kind of audit these first two games, you say to yourself, why haven't they just hammered the ball inside? And frankly, a lot of it has to do with the whistle and the fact that Joker, it is getting messed with, and they're being physical with him, and it's working. He's generally not this inefficient, and I know he's putting up numbers, but you know, when they send those doubles and triples and swarm, there's nothing he can really do, because the rest of the guys aren't shooting well, and he's not able to space the floor and alleviate that pressure. So maybe that's their only hope for game three. Their big adjustment is just force feeding Joker and say, Joker, give us 30 shots and you know, let the chips fall where they may. And maybe that's their best hope, because unless these guys can start shooting confidently, I mean, this series is already a wrap. The only guys that have competed, in my opinion,
Will Barton.
And really brought it are Will Barton, Monte Morris, and Nikola Jokic. Jermichael Green has played really hard on that second unit. Bones Highland, in his playoff debut, has tried. Austin Rivers has competed. Jeff Green has had a couple moments, but you know, the Aaron Gordon and Bryn Forbes, I mean, these guys, these pieces that you just need to contribute and you need to be factors, have been non-factors and probably negative factors. Aaron Gordon, another night of 3 of 9 or 3 of 10. I think he had 6 or 8 points last night. His confidence is, is waning. You can see it. He airballs his first shot from the elbow. It's like a 12-foot jumper, and he airballs it. You can see Draymond Green sagging off of him from the three-point line, playing him 6 or 7 feet off the three-point line when he has it, daring him to shoot. The only three-pointers that you really want Aaron Gordon taking are those corner three-pointers. But, you know, Aaron Gordon probably has enough pride in where he is, feels compelled to take those shots if he's as wide open as the Warriors were leaving him. So I don't know what the counter is if a guy is uneasy or uncomfortable shooting those open three-pointers. You have a real problem on your hands, particularly as our colleague Mark Kisla wrote, a guy who you just committed a huge $80+ million deal to moving forward, because last year's playoff run with Aaron Gordon was underwhelming. Granted, he told me he was dealing with a hamstring injury, but the first two games that we've seen from him this season, where he's ostensibly been healthy, have been no-shows. And it's not just the offensive end where you expect him to at least contribute inside the paint and be a bully. It's on the defensive end. Jordan Poole is cooking him. And Jordan Poole, like we mentioned, is playing out of his mind and raising his game in the playoffs. But Aaron Gordon is having a hard time staying in front of him. And you just wonder whether one end of the court is bleeding into the other end of the court. And I was told last night that Draymond Green and Klay Thompson were talking a lot of smack to Aaron Gordon last night amid his shooting struggles. And I think that they let him know, we're not scared when you have an open jumper.
I think so. I mentioned this earlier. In Aaron Gordon's defense, he's being asked to do something that he probably shouldn't be being asked to do, and he's being asked to do it because Michael Porter Jr. isn't here, and neither is Jamal Murray in uniform. So I don't know if you can make some, you know, full-scale judgment about Aaron Gordon and his value going forward with the Nuggets when he's not slotting into the role that he should be. He's basically being asked to do some of what he was being asked to do with the Magic. And, you know, that didn't always go well in Orlando. So slight defense there. That being said, good gravy, has he not played well? It's really, like you said, two playoffs in a row where we're just seeing this sort of underwhelming, perhaps a little phased, scared of the moment, play from him. Either it's in his head or I don't know what, how you say it. He doesn't have a lot of playoff reps, so maybe that's part of it. All thrown together, though, it's not enough.
Yeah, neither does Jordan Poole. And he doesn't seem to be phased. No. Granted, he's got a bigger margin for error with Steph and Clay next
right.
to him.
He's got some stars around him.
Right. And so, you know, this is going to be the biggest question. When this series and when this season is done, Tim Connelly and Michael Malone are going to have to audit what happened, the 48-win regular season, and however long this series goes, and they're going to have to say to ourselves, how accurately can we assess what happened, given that Jamal Murray and Michael Porter Jr. are on the bench, and we have not seen the quote-unquote optimal roles and the roles that these guys were designed to play, we have not seen that manifested on the court. So how fair is it to judge them when they're playing out of position? And I wholeheartedly consider that, but there are aspects of the game that I think are non-negotiable. And I want to see, Monte Morris is game. He's not, his eyes aren't getting big. Will Barton is game, and is doing everything he can in his power to give them just different weapons and resources to try to help Joker. I just haven't seen it from Gordon. And frankly, I just think he's a little bit uneasy with the responsibilities that he's being asked to do right now.
Right. He's at 7.5 points per game right now. Five rebounds. Has half a block per game. 1.5 assists, 7.45 PER. Obviously, you need a lot better, a lot more than that from arguably, your third best player, second best player? You would hope second best player, giving what he's getting paid.
Right.
But he has not been that at all.
So you can see the frustration, where this frustration was happening, where the defensive lapses. You're not getting production from your typical guys. Joker's getting irritated. And that bleeds into that timeout midway through the third quarter. Warriors are up 72-62. Monte Morris had just hit a three-pointer. They go to timeout, and it looked on camera as if DeMarcus Cousins said something to Will Barton, and the two needed to be separated, and they're kind of jawing at each other a little bit. And while we don't really know what was said other than some, quote, goofy bleep, according to Will Barton, that when I asked him after the game, I said, Will, what was it? He says, it's some goofy stuff that I can't entertain, almost as if, like, DeMarcus is saying something that I need to be above. And regardless of what he said, my biggest takeaway from that is, why is DeMarcus Cousins giving any kind of energy, negative energy, after they just hit a three-pointer, they cut it to a 10-point lead, the Warriors are going to a timeout, and this is a time and a fragile place where every single player on the Nuggets needs to be pulling in the same direction. And in what world is that helpful to be sniping or potentially undermining a guy, whether he's struggling on defense or not? That's not how you go about it.
I do recall reading a lot of stories about how Boogie was going to be calling vets out and being the guy that is a spur in the behind of players on the roster. Just didn't pick the right spot there.
That's fine. But, I mean, time and place matters a lot. Exactly. So when we talk about Jeff Green getting on his guys, trying to get them in line, like he's picking his spots as a veteran, as a guy who's been on 8 playoff teams. That's an NBA record, 8 playoff teams, by the way. Jeff Green knows that was a sensitive, emotional time, and he was trying to quell the nerves and quell kind of the emotions. But post game, there was no hiding it. Monte Morris said this craft's embarrassing.
That Monte Morris interview at the post game was, I think, very revealing about a team that just was despondent.
It's a great word. And I asked Monte, I said, did anybody speak up in the post game locker room? And he goes, we went around the room. Everybody said their piece. So it does sound like there was a lot of voices, a lot of airing stuff out. But Monte also said that if we're getting on each other for various lapses, it's way too late in the season. He used the word war to describe this playoff series. It's way too late to be having these conversations. These are conversations and mistakes that needed to be ironed out months ago. And what he's referring to, he wasn't referring to the Boogie Will spat. He was talking about transition lapses and just knowing who your guys are and knowing about switches and giving effort and really just competing on the defensive end, fighting around screens and as opposed to dying on screens. And that's what happened. You need to be perfect against those 3 star guards. And the Nuggets just were so far from that and then just caved in that third quarter. And Michael Malone used the word splinter. I didn't even ask him about the team splintering. I asked him what his message was in the post-game locker room. And Michael Malone says, we can't splinter. We need to stay together. Our biggest challenge is getting on that plane as one team on our way back to Denver for game 3. And that is alarming, damning, concerning, coming out in the middle of a playoff series. And it is as frank and blunt of talk as I've ever heard from the Nuggets and Michael Malone, especially at this juncture of a season. So, you always have to take it with a significant grain of salt because they're missing so many key pieces. But last night felt to me as if it was a non-negotiable night. I don't care who's available. You need to compete and show up when you are playing a team as well-oiled as the Golden State Warriors. And for 2 quarters they did, and then they let go of the rope. And that was that.
One other thing I've noticed early on in this series is that the Warriors are really making Nikola Jokic work on both ends of the floor. His guy is the screener a lot of times. He has to show up on defense, on the perimeter. He has to move around. And then obviously all of the physicality on the other end, different looks, all of that. And it looks like it's worn him down a little bit. Have you noticed that as well?
Yeah, I mean, in game 1, I think Nikola Jokic was worn down by the third quarter because they put him in so many pick-and-roll actions and just exhausted him, switched him onto a shooter and made him guard in space, or you would end up yielding an open 3-pointer if he didn't push up to the level. So they're absolutely trying to attack him, trying to exhaust him, and it's working. I think at one point the Nuggets made an adjustment where they put Joker on Andrew Wiggins, as opposed to one of their best screeners in Looney and Draymond. So that was just a little tweak that Malone made, but like he's getting worn down, frustrated. He's missing shots that he's accustomed to making. And like I mentioned, man, in the third quarter, to me, that looked like a guy who was resigned and understood, what it was. And so absolutely. Their plan of attack is to isolate and attack him on defense, make him work on both ends, because at some point the MVP is going to wear down. And, you know, I realize that there's going to be a conversation when and if Nikola Jokic wins his 2nd consecutive MVP. Is this a quote-unquote bad MVP if he's to get ousted in the first round in a non-competitive series? And while that argument can be made, the flip side of that is that the entire, you know, NBA fandom is seeing what Nikola Jokic had in carrying this team to 48 wins in the regular season, and whether that's impressive or not to you, and whether a first round exit matters or not. The reality is that he hasn't had a lot of help. I mean, they're relying on Bones Highland, a rookie in his second game, to be a huge factor in this. Monte Morris picks up two fouls in the first 2 minutes. Bones Highland is essentially your starting point guard yesterday. And talking about how depleted they are, Austin Rivers had to leave the game because of a back injury. Well, in garbage time yesterday, Austin Rivers was in the game to close the game when they had already waved the white flag because they didn't have other options to play. That's how depleted this team is right now. You want to see a perimeter defensive guy step up, and people kept asking, who are they going to go to? Well, they don't have those options.
Dave Unruh is not walking through that door.
He's not walking through that door. There's another question of how much it would have mattered against a team like this. But Bryn Forbes is struggling mightily on the defensive end. And, and Bones is obviously getting a taste of what playoff defense is about. And it's real. There's no hiding from it. The teams, when you can hone in on one team, they expose the weakest link. And that's what we're seeing from a team that frankly just doesn't have a lot of good defensive guards.
So speaking of being depleted, Jamal Murray has been on the bench for all of these games. Michael Porter Jr. also out. Is there any hope, scintilla of hope, that one of these guys is going to suit up and all of a sudden be on the court in game three?
Well, let's ask ourselves this. Jamal Murray, assuming he was physically ready to come back, did not come back in the regular season, did not come back to start the playoffs, and now they're looking at a 2-0 deficit and could very well be facing a 4- or 5-game series. In what world does that make any sense that Jamal Murray would return?
Does not make sense. I will chime in and say that right now.
I think that we're past the point where it makes any sense for Jamal Murray to return, A. And B, Mark Spears of ESPN reported, talked to Michael Porter. Michael Porter says he's not ruling out a first-round return. I tweeted this, and I stick by it. I would be stunned if Michael Porter Jr. returned. I am not refuting what Mark's saying, because Mark had a conversation with Michael and he professed some level of confidence that he was getting close. That's fine. What I believe is that it is not around the corner. And if Porter were to suit up, I would be extremely surprised. I watched him go through pregame warmup yesterday. He did some shooting drills, 1-on-0. It is not close to what I've seen Jamal Murray do pregame in doing drills with 3 and 4 staffers and taking some of those bumps and bruises that you would inevitably see in a game. So, if Porter believes it, that's great. I am dubious that is actually going to happen.
How many 5-on-5s has Michael Porter Jr. participated in the last month?
I don't know. And I would be surprised if there were any, but I don't know that for sure. But we do know that Jamal Murray has participated in 5-on-5s when he went down to Grand Rapids. And I know that he's played in physical pickup games with some of the team staffers. But all of it is moot. I do not see either one of their star players coming back, particularly in a series as seemingly lopsided as this one is.
All right, so we're going to hand the whistle over to Mike Singer and say, Mike, we want the game plan for game three. How are the Nuggets going to turn this around? How are they going to change the tide here and move it in their direction in game three back in Ball Arena?
Yeah, I mean, I think it really starts with making the Warriors work. You need them to be taking the ball out of the basket. You need to be setting all kinds of screens and setting flare actions and making them work on the defensive end and fight around screens and deal with incessant passing that the Warriors are doing to you. If Aaron Gordon's struggling, give him some little alley-oop lobs just to get him going, see the ball go in, get him working around the basket. Like, I haven't seen a ton of those actions. All I've seen is just Joker trying to operate deep in the post. Obviously effective, but when you need to try to get everybody else involved, run some little elbow screens just so that Joker can lob it up there to AG. Get Jeff Green out in transition where he thrives. Jeff Green has hit a couple three-pointers, but I have not really seen him get out and run, which is one of his big strengths. Like we mentioned earlier, I trust that Monte Morris and Will Barton will continue to play well and shoot with confidence. But you need pretty much all of those role players, Monte, Will, AG, Bones, Jamichael, to show up and to bring it and to give you real sustainable contributions if you want to make up the margins of beating this team. Like I mentioned, I think if you were to draft the second best Nugget, it might be the fifth or sixth player drafted from both of these teams. And that's a pretty lopsided talent gap. And so how do you overcome that? To use Michael Malone's phrase, you need to play almost perfect basketball. And not only do you need to play perfect basketball, you need to sustain it well into the second half, which hasn't even come close to happening in the first two games.
So my earlier suggestion, slow it down, pound the rock, limit possessions. You're not buying
sure. Coach Schubert, we can go with that. But I'm just saying you need to focus centrally on propping up some of the guys that are struggling and feature them and see if you can make it more of a team affair, because I think the Golden State Warriors are more than happy to let Nikola Jokic shoot 35 times, especially if he's going to be inefficient. You know, which we've talked about for a host of reasons because of how physical and how many looks the Warriors are giving him.
Couldn't he possibly, you dump it into him and he just puts those guys in foul trouble? He just attacks them in a way that it's just too physical. Something has to be called.
I mean, maybe that's the adjustment, but I'll tell you, the game two adjustment was more Bryn Forbes. That was what Michael Malone talked about going to, and that wasn't really effective.
Did not. Although the bench was not bad. The bench was not bad early in the second game. They actually were ahead double digits at one point. So it's hard to really pin it on them. It's been those late stretches with the starting unit going up against the lineup of death that has just absolutely swung both games, both times.
Yeah, and it's a perfect storm. It's turnovers, it's bad shot selection, it's lack of engagement in transition defense, it's kind of folding when those runs happen, when you don't hustle and contest those long three-pointers from Poole and Steph and Clay, and it becomes a perfect storm. And, you know, we saw it the first game, we really saw it the second game. And the Nuggets just don't have a lot of counters. Can they keep their composure for game three? Can Monte avoid his tech when he bounced the ball off the basket stanchion and missed? Can Nikola Jokic, keep his frustration in check? I mean, that's two games in a row they've had an ejection. Boogie got ejected game one, and Nikola Jokic got ejected game two. This is a Warriors team. Draymond Green said it last night. When he senses tension, he presses, and he likes to expose it and expedite the process. And that's who Draymond Green is as a competitor, getting under the Nuggets' skin. And, I mean, I'll just say this.
That cuts both ways, by the way. You can frustrate Draymond Green, especially, I would say, if, let's say, you were to attack him with Nikola Jokic and you do get him in foul trouble. You every foul that gets whistled on Draymond Green is a federal case. He gets really frustrated. Yeah, he did some miming last night, if I recall, about what Nikola Jokic.
With Nikola Jokic flopping, yeah.
Yes, with Nikola Jokic flopping. This is, of course, after he's been pushing him the entire game whenever he touches the ball. My point is this. If you could frustrate Draymond Green, then it goes the other way. And I think that's totally possible. We've seen it before. He wants punched a man in the groin on national television. I think the Nuggets could do it, especially through Nikola.
Well, Coach Schubert has the game plan right there, folks.
That's right. I guess I'm just, simple basketball mind over here, but big versus small, use the advantage you have. And the advantage you have is the best big man in the game.
You're right. You're right. Play to your strengths. They just don't have a ton of strengths right now. And they're kind of trying to search on the fly. And it looks like, in my opinion, that Michael Mullen is just searching for guys who will compete.
Right.
Do I think anything drastic happens? Meaning it's a change in the starting lineup? Probably not. But if you were to look at an AG or a Jeff Green coming off the bench, maybe you make that move for Jamichael Green. We know that he works well with Nikola. We know that Jamichael's going to bring it. But I would ask, you'd have to ask the question, does putting Aaron Gordon on the bench with the second unit, does that do anything for his confidence, or do you just need to embolden him alongside the rest of the starters? And I think that those are probably questions that they're asking, that Denver's coaching staff is asking themselves right now. How can we change up the tenor, the energy, the scheme? How can we stem their momentum? Because they have all of it. Those guys dancing and prancing and preening and shimmying, it got under their skin. And I saw Monte Morris trying to talk some smack back to Draymond Green. And yes, Monte is a fighter, but they were down double digits at that point, and it just doesn't cut as hard, when you're losing like that.
Right. I think, is there any chance, are they just going to bring Steph Curry off the bench this whole series? Or do you think at some point he's going to start?
I mean, why risk it? Why mess up a good thing? If they end this series quickly, he'll have time to recover. I don't see why you change anything. Steph Curry's been unbelievable. He's going up somewhat against Denver's second unit. If he's not entirely physically there yet, I don't see why you change anything, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I think you're right. Everything's working. You might as well just stay with the formula until somebody forces you to not stay with the formula. So, all right. Just any other thoughts on that scene from Game 2? That crowd was nuts. Absolutely nuts. Now, given they were given a lot of things to cheer for, but it felt like Phoenix last year in a lot of ways.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just going to go back to it felt like a pretty seminal moment where I think I wasn't the only person asking how significant of a loss is this, and have we learned something about our team that needs changing? Do we need to find better perimeter defenders? Do we need to find guys who we entirely trust?
Okay, so here's the problem with that. They don't have a lot of cap space starting next season. Their maneuverability is very limited unless they decide they want to maybe part ways with Aaron Gordon, and then you have to find somebody who wants Aaron Gordon who's going to give you the things that you want in return. Not easy. You've got Michael Porter Jr., his max contract starts next season. Jamal Murray's already getting paid, Nikola Jokic, and you're giving, what, $20 million a year to Aaron Gordon. I mean, how much can you do around the edges?
My point is, last night was the kind of loss that spawns those questions. Or do you ask yourself, we can't overreact? I know Tim Connelly is very careful not to overreact, but it felt like a big loss because it's so rare that we see this team fracture and talk publicly about any kind of incident that they couldn't keep under wraps, that didn't stay in the locker
room. All right, so I'll be Tim Connelly for a second. I'm not going to overreact to it. If I were Tim, what I'm watching right now is the thing I knew was coming the whole time, which is we're going to get in the playoffs. But once we get there, we don't have the horses this year to make it happen. We knew it the whole time. Unless Jamal Murray and Michael Porter Jr. were going to come back, this team isn't it. And to make some huge judgment about a certain player or what you've got, not around the edges. Now, around the edges, you can make some, improvements. But to make big picture decisions based upon this series with this team at this time, I just think that'd be short-sighted.
I agree with you. That being said, the component that I think is non-negotiable are is the attribute of I want to see guys fight, and I want to see guys compete, and I'm okay with going out in four, going out in five, if I see everybody bringing it and not scared of the moment. And if that happens, I'm good with whatever happens and I can chalk this up. But those are things that I can still glean information, even if this season's a wrap, and even if there was a hard cap on what could happen in the postseason. So I think that there is still valuable information to be gleaned. Who's going to show up? Who's going to, you know, pull themselves up out of what was a dispiriting loss, humiliating, embarrassing loss? Who's going to show up? I would like to know that question as a reporter, as a general manager, an executive, as a coach, all of those things, as a teammate. I want to know who's going to fight with me, even when it gets ugly. Because that is invaluable information when push comes to shove.
Yep. One other thing to add on to that, and I don't want to open up a whole can of worms because we're about to wrap this thing up, but Nikola Jokic, I think we have a lot of evidence now that he can lose his temper quickly and things can unravel on him in ways that really affect the team. I don't know how you address that, but it's certainly something that would be concerning going forward.
Yeah. And Nikola knows it. He'd be the first one to admit it. I can't do that. Like I said earlier, when he got ejected last night, the game was already a wrap. But if I am opposing teams, I'm saying, let's examine what happened in the Phoenix game in game four and what happened last night that got under his skin. And was it a factor of he just felt overwhelmed with responsibility, with pressure, with how much he was carrying? Because if you look at the disparity in both those series, that's the common denominator right there, is how much weight can this dude really hold? And at some point he's going to crack when he feels he's not getting an MVP's whistle, which is what he deserves.
All right. So I do want to make this note before we sign off here on the Nuggets Inc. podcast. I see we have a couple of new reviews on our iTunes, on Apple Podcast. We don't have time to read those today. We will read them at the next one, and we will have something to give away as well. If you didn't listen last week, we gave away the 2009 Western Conference Champions Nuggets shirt to the caveman, wonderful human being from what I can tell from our email correspondence. We'll be giving more away in the future. Please go on iTunes and rate us 5 stars, rip us to shreds. Mike's got a terrible baritone. It doesn't matter. Just say what you want to say as long as you give us 5 stars. Mike, anything you want to say before we log out of here?
Yeah, I got to go catch my flight from the Bay Area.
Well, safe travels, my friend. We'll see you soon.
Thanks a lot, man.
Turn around. You're living.